tell the last group, but I didn't have time. But I'll start right out with this. I was down on Guadalcanal. That's where my first tour of duty was, on Guadalcanal. And it was a horrible place to be. The Marines had already taken it and secured about a 5-mile radius from our airfield. And but there was another great big part of the island, and there was Japanese still on it. And they made life miserable to us by what they did and what they didn't do. And as a result of that sort of thing, I came home with a real bad hatred of the Japanese. Now, I'm not going any farther with that part other than to tell you that my middle son married a Japanese girl just 33 years ago, that I didn't appreciate her at all, but she wound me around her finger, and she's the best thing that I have. I'll tell you, she's the smartest little thing. She's a nice looking gal. She's given me a grandson and a granddaughter. And all the hatred that I have for the Japanese, she just wiped out. And she's marvelous. Now I'm going into, this happened down at Guadalcanal too. I wasn't flying that day. I'd been out the day before. And I just enjoyed the time rolling around. When I say wasn't out, is that we were on bombing missions just every day. And I was just enjoying it. A chance to get a nice shower. Most of the time we were in our foxhole when they were bombing us. Oh. And as I was going by the, I was going down to get something to eat. I was going by the skipper's tent, and I heard somebody yell my name and something like, "Campbell, get in here." Of course, the higher ups, you get in there with them. And they said, he says, oh, I forget the guy's name right now, but he told me his name, and he was a junior grade. I was an ensign, and he was a step above me. And he says, "You go with..." What? I wish his name would come to me. "You go..." I'll call him JG. "You go with JG and get an extra parachute, and you're going to fly up to the Russell Island, which is 60 miles away. And you are to pick up an army man, an army captain." And J.G., and J.G. was walking away, and he said, "He's going to pick up a general, an army general. So, get going." And Osei, he said, "Land short, because that runway's got a great big revetment built up of old coconut tree trunks and everything, because they are extending that runway out for twice the size so that you can put heavy bombers on that, and they'll save 120 miles and then they go far out and farther out on the bombing." Well, I knew about that before, because I had to make an emergency landing there coming home from one of our bombing runs. So I just got in, followed him. I let him go in, but I always did come in on my landings as though I was coming in on a carry. And I kept that up, and I liked that way because I could always land right at the end of the runway, and I had plenty to go on. I did this time. I just put it right on the end of the runway, and I had lots of room to coast. And the JG, of course, he's above me. I was second. He always went first. Well, I got up there and I turned around, and here was this army captain jump up And he said, "Are you Campbell?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I'm supposed to go with you." And I said, "Get in the back seat. And there's a parachute there. Get it on. Get seated in there, and we'll take off." I didn't shut the engine down at all. And he did that. He got in. I was looking out where we could steer out. When the JG came over to me and he says, "Campbell, I want you to get out of your plane. And I'm going to take your plane back because I ran into this revetment and I ruined the propeller." And I looked out there and here that thing was just bent. And he ran right into that revetment. And he's the leader. I had to obey him. But before I could even move, the general that he was supposed to pick up, he got up on the wing too and he says, "Lieutenant, you get off and wait for your own plane." And I thought, "Now wait a minute. I haven't been in the Navy too long, but does an Army general have control over a Navy lieutenant? If I don't obey this lieutenant, boy, he can make life miserable for me for the rest of the time we're in the same squadron." And I was trying to think, now, how am I going to say this nicely to the general that I have to let him... But before I would mully miss out. I said, "Boy, I wish they had taught this to me in flight school or something." And the guy backed down. The JG backed down and got off. And then the general looks over to the back seat and he says, "Captain, get out of there." Then he got the chute on, got himself seated in the back. I said, "Okay, we'll take off." So I went up there, and I went up to about, 5,000 feet. You know, I hadn't gone very far, and I said to him, "You ever been in a plane like this?" We could talk to one another. And he says, "No, I've been in a big plane, but nothing like this." I said, "Well, I tell you, you've got all the instruments you need to fly this thing. There's a throttle there, and there's rudders for your feet." And I said, "There's a stick that's unclips on the left-hand side, inside of the fuselage, and you can take that and put it down, and there's a hole there, and that'll be your stick control." And he did. And I said, "Okay, now we'll make some gentle turns." And I was just talking to him like, well, I'll tell you what I thought later. I said, it'll take us 2 minutes to make this complete turn, things like that. Then I had him cut back and glide. I put the power on, climb. And then we made some just gentle stuff, not wild stuff, and no loop-de-loops and things like that. And he was doing pretty good. Well, I said, "We better get going back." And I said, I'll put it on the heading, the right heading. And I said, "You've got one little instrument back there that has a little miniature airplane on it, and it's in a thing that's like the horizon." And I said, "If you're leaning over on that thing, that'll show that the plane will not be level. So I said, you keep that level and on that heading and at 5,000 feet and the altimeter's there for you to see." And I said, "You can take it off." And you know that guy flew it back 60 miles down to Guadalcanal. And then when we got ready to land at the Army base, I said, "Now you can put your hand on the throttle your hand on the right hand on the stick, keep your feet on the rudders. But I says, don't pressure me, you just feel what I am doing. And he did. We came in and landed it. And when we landed, and I didn't shut the engine off because I was going to get out of there. But here was a platoon of, I think it was 60 guys with their guns here and their bayonets and things. And he gave them a salute and said, at ease. He's yelling over the engine, making a little noise. And he says, I need a pen to write. He kept me there for 35 minutes. He said, I'm going to write to my wife and tell her that I was flying a plane. And I, so he now, did I really fly this plane? He said, yes, you did. And he went over that time and time again. What did we do on this thing? I said, well, I was partly in control before when we were doing these other things, but I said, when I put you on the heading, you flew it all the way down, and you were doing such a good job that I didn't have to tell you anything about what to do. And he was, and I, he kept asking me these things, and it, finally I said, well, let me put it this way to you, General. I said, you were flying a combat plane in what is known as a combat zone. That's where the enemy is. And I didn't say any more, but I knew, and I got a pretty good idea what he was thinking then. He says, combat zone and a combat plane. Well, you know, generals have a lot of ribbons and medals and stuff. Well, for flying a combat plane in a combat zone, he could get a bronze star medal. And he'd probably get a nice ribbon to go with it and put it on his uniform. And boy, he was the happiest clown that you ever saw. And I can imagine he was telling his grandchildren, if he lived through the war, telling his grandchildren, if I were he, he'd say something. The pilot's name was Campbell, and he told me that I just did a wonderful job. And look at this medal, and look at this thing that I put in for it. So I helped the general out, and it was just one of those things that everything fell into place for me. I might have still been waiting there for them to come to fix the propeller of that other plane. Now, I guess we're getting close to time. Do you have any questions you would like to ask?
What plane were you flying?
Oh, have you seen any movies that accurately depict your experience?
You'll have to speak a little louder.
Okay, have you seen any movies that accurately depict your experiences in the war?
Somebody tell me, I'm not.
Have you seen any movies that are like accurately depicting what you did?
Well, I'll tell you what, no, I haven't, but you know when I was in San Diego when we were practicing dive bombing and carrier landing. I think it was Reagan that was making a movie, and it was supposed to be dive bombing. And they came down to get our group of guys and flying in formation, and I don't know why they picked me unless I looked older than everybody else. And they took the same type of plane that I taught the general. They took off the isinglass and stuff on the side, and they put him in the back, and they put between the pilot, and that was me, and him, some bolts and stuff, and they put his camera there. And also, the back seat had a ring for the gunner guns that the rear seat man had. And then they tied him to that so that he wouldn't fall out. And I was in the front, and he would give me where he wanted me to fly so that he could take pictures of this thing. And he had to make sure that he didn't get any of, I suppose he could get some of the wing in, but out there so that they saw all these guys in formation. And he'd have me go down below, and then sometimes he'd have me go way over the side and make a slow turn loop so he could take it like looking down at them, things like that. And I know they told us it was Reagan that was making this picture, but I never ever saw it ever come out. And we just went in straight formation for them. They didn't have any fancy stuff, just something that they could use in background stuff for the movie. And that was kind of, to me, it was kind of interesting. I enjoyed doing it, but I never did see the movie come out.
Can I ask another question?
Guys, yes. You need to go back to class in about 2 minutes, okay?
Okay.
So just in 2 minutes, go back.
Okay.
Okay.
What was the most difficult part of the war for you?
The most difficult part?
Yeah.
Well, I think the most difficult part was getting... being dumped on the Guadalcanal, which was I don't like to give you bad stuff on this, but we were in this coconut place, and we were not far away from the water. And there was a horrible smell there all the time. And I asked somebody one time, I says, what in the world is that smell? And I says, it's especially worse in the after there's a little rain. And he said, Sonny, you are smelling the smell of death. He said, this is where the Marines landed and came up through here. Now, there was a lot of them killed. There was a lot of the Japanese killed. Now, the Marines took care of their own. But for the Japanese, they just dug shallow graves, and they're right down below. And one of the things that we did to that was the smell. They were down below, and we had our foxhole that we were in just about every other night. You might be there half an hour, you might be there 2 hours, because they would be bombing. And we had a nice foxhole, held 10 people, but and it was heaped up with lots of stuff over the top. They would had to have a direct hit on it to do us any damage, because we were down far enough and off to the side of it. So good. But the Japanese that were still on the islands would infiltrate night down and come into the places close by, and there was hardly a night that went by that they didn't find the next day that they had killed somebody. They just go up to the tent, and I know we put the flaps of ours out because it was so muddy, and they would have a knife, something, kill them. And they didn't care because they knew they were going to get killed anyway. And they would climb up in these trees, get themselves placed, and you might be morning come, reveille, and they're out there, and they liked the big group, and then they would just shoot things knowing that they were going to get killed. So when you went to bed at night, you thought of that fella, maybe it's our turn to get hit. And this is one of the things that made me come home, where I hated the Japanese. I hated them. Nobody knew that but me. But that's the way it was. Now, there was one of the funny parts about this. Incidentally, the 6 months we were there, we weren't troubled. But there was one fella, 2 o'clock in the morning, he made a horrible yelling. And what had happened is he heard some scuffling, something. The rats were terrible, and that could have been that. And then he reached around and he found an arm. And he just started wrestling with that and yelling at the top of his voice. And the cot he was in fell down, and then he hung on to that arm and rolled out through the tent place, out onto the grass-like stuff they had out there. And pretty soon, we all ran up with our flashlights and our guns, thinking, boy, somebody's here. Well, what happened is that he felt he grabbed his own arm because it was sleeping or dead, and he didn't know it was his arm. So it sounded like somebody else's. So he was fighting his own arm, so he's rolling around out in the grass, and then all of a sudden he realized that it was his own arm, and the feeling came back. I don't know if that's the kind of story she wanted to hear.
But, these are the kind of stories we don't get in history class, no, so we really appreciate telling us these.
This poor guy, his name was Dave Beck, and he was a football player for Georgia Tech. He was a good one. He wasn't a huge guy, but boy, I tell you, he was strong as an ox. And poor Dave, you know, your buddies aren't kind to you, things like that. And he'd say something like, well, Dave, when you go to sleep tonight, if you feel an arm, that'll be your mama that's here to take care of you, or something like that. Of course, you didn't want to stand close to him when you said something like that. Do we have any time left here?
I think it's been 1-2 minutes, but
well,
we should hit that. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. We have to go now, but
do you?